comments or answers or complaints from what we've covered so far?
I have a question. When we're working with breathing meditation, this is something that happens with me fairly often, is I start with the focus at the nostrils, but after several breaths, quite often the breath is moving in the body, and it's like my attention wants to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like the in-breath tends to be more at the nostrils, but quite often at the out-breath, I can't feel it at the nostrils anymore. It's more, it's settling into my body, and then it seems to be kind of coming out kind of everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... Should I be trying to keep it at my nostrils, or should I be following it?
It's an interesting question for many reasons. I just preclude my comments by describing a little bit about the breath meditation. Although it seems fairly straightforward meditating on the breath, depending on how one focuses, the meditation on the breath can be used for many different things. For example, it's the number one way to develop that in the kasinas, especially the elements, working with the elements. And the breath are the number one ways of developing psychic powers. Prophecy, things like that, you know. A little bit of walking on water for those warm summer nights, you know. And one of the ways you use breath for psychic powers, for example, is by counting backward or counting to five and then back, or counting 1, 3, 5, 7, 2, 4, and so forth like that. Believe it or not, different ways, or focusing on the breath in different ways. Focusing on it going out to a point here and actually being, until you can actually see it coming out to a point here, things like that. So there are very many ways to meditate on the breath. How you are going to meditate on the breath depends a lot on your dialogue with the teacher that you're working with. As with any meditation, it helps to work with a teacher because you want to be able to just go into the experience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And not try to figure out where the experience is taking you while you're also trying to go there. You want to forget all that and just do the meditation, and then afterward be in a dialogue with somebody who has done that meditation, so that you can give them a report and they have some idea of whether you've changed it slightly or not. So that you yourself can, it's like if you are going to go to Drumheller and somebody says, well, it's south and east of here, there are, that's a lot of territory. So, or it's in Alberta, that's a lot of territory too, you know? And so you want to have some idea, and then you can say to them, okay, well, I've passed this road, or I see that. And they say, oh, well, maybe you want to correct by going a little more east or a little more south. Do you understand? And it's like that. You are exploring it, and you need somebody who's explored it to sort of guide you along every once in a while, not because there's a right way or a wrong way, but because there is a destination. Okay. So how you meditate on the breath depends on your destination. That's number one. The way I was talking about meditation this morning, I'm talking about how you use meditation as a means to bring you into the present moment. I'm not talking about developing meditation to make yourself healthier. I'm not talking about developing meditation to develop psychic powers. I'm not talking about meditation in order to have good bliss states. All of those things may very well happen when you do the meditation this way. But the number one thing you're doing is trying to bring your mind to be able to hold it at one point. regardless of the circumstances. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
It is considered a very good skill to be able to take the mind and set it somewhere and hold it there with the central focus, while the peripheral focus can still pick up data about what else the breath is doing. But if you lose that central focus, then when things get really interesting, you're just going to get lost. You're going to go off over here, and then you're going to follow something interesting over there, and then the other thing that is taught in Buddhist tradition is that the number one thing you're training for is to be able to die well. But Buddhism isn't that really that concerned about this life. That's really too bad, isn't it? Because we're all so wonderful. Buddhism should be concerned with our life. But it isn't. But it's very concerned with your death. Because what you want to be able to do is know what your face is before you are born. What is it that is real if the you that you think you are is dissolving? And in order to be able to be there when that occurs, when the whole sense of this life starts to dissolve, you need to have developed a mind that can hold steady to one point, even if the point disappears. Well, the mind is very habitual. So if you teach the mind to hold to one point, whether you can see the point or not, you develop a very powerful mind. Then you can take that powerful mind and move it on any point. How's that? It's true, it may not be interesting, but as I was saying this morning, the number one demon is the one that isn't interested. Okay, I've watched three breaths, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, yeah, in, out, ho-hum, so what else is new? Is there a better act in town? Oh, down in the belly, that's interesting. Oh, yeah. Entertainment value, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Versus just trying to see if you can just hold the mind to one point, no matter what arises. And boy, will, you know, much more interesting things will arise if you hold the mind. It's really true, your price will go up. You will get some real goodies come to you. Just hold your mind. Say, thank you very much, and I'm watching it.
Only hold one thought moment at a time.
Yeah.
And that's why.
Yeah, but you know, concentrate in the Abhidhamma, concentration only arises at one point at one time. However, the measurement, the duration of that point is 16 times faster than the speed of matter. And matter is considered to beat at the speed of light. Now, if you're like me, at this point, I always say, who measured it? I've got that kind of mind. And then my second question is, what did they use to measure it? But that's the party line. And it seems to be true.
When you're talking about this holding the mind at that point, and you're able to watch other thoughts arise, are you not holding at one time a number of so-called thoughts?
Not at one time, because mind beats 16 times for every beat of matter. That means mind beats very, very rapidly. What you call one point, that you see as one point, is actually a whole streaming of mind. There has to be a whole streaming of mind moments before there is even the beginning of an awareness. So how you Can I just finish this movement? Okay. What you're doing when you're developing concentration is you're developing the mind streaming all in one direction, very like a laser, you know, the same kind of light lined up in the same way. Makes it very powerful, very powerful mind. And usually what happens if you're sitting in meditation and you're sitting here and you say, okay, I'm watching my breath, okay, I'm watching my breath, oh, there's that, oh, God, a taste of that. That noodle dish was really good. Okay, now I'm watching my breath. What kind of tea have I got tonight? Okay, I'm watching my breath. Okay, I'm watching. Maybe I just need to move a little bit on my cushion. Okay, I'm watching my breath. I wonder if it's going to rain tomorrow. Okay, I'm watching my breath. Okay, I'm going to watch my breath. Oh, Otto is really watching me carefully now, but he's leaning off to, okay, I'm watching my breath. Okay. You know, the mind goes mostly in the direction you think you're totally absorbed in. But all these little side moments are also happening very, very fast. And when enough of any one come in, then you actually have a thought in that direction. If enough of auto or tea or come in, then I'll look at it, or my mind will go trying to feel it. And what you're teaching yourself to do is to get more and more of the mind beats lined onto one point. Yes, Blaine.
I was just curious, when in meditation, we're focusing on one point, and I'm witnessing thoughts arising and passing away. What is it that's doing the witnessing of thoughts arising and passing away, when in kind of a standard theme is that thoughts are supposed to be our mind? I mean, in a sense, what are thoughts?
No, not in Buddhism. In Buddhism, there are different characteristics which don't have... In Buddhism, there are more words for mind than there are in English. In English, there are more words for emotional states than there are in Buddhism. So you have a language difficulty here. But there are two aspects of the mind's focusing ability. One is called vitakka. It tacks onto something, vitakka. And the other is called vichara. It gets into the char and drives around into the chariot. One is the mind that focuses directly on something, and the other is the mind that is picking up peripheral information. Very like your eyes have two kind of vision, tunnel, the central focus and the peripheral vision. Peripheral vision is better at picking up light. You notice that? Ever look at stars at night? And faint stars you can't see if you look directly, but if you look off to the side, you'll see them glimmering, and then slowly you can find them. I used to love going star watching a lot. I used to do that a lot. And when you're looking for a particular constellation or a galaxy that's quite faint, a smear, you look off to the side of where it is and you just relax and your peripheral vision will pick it out. But if you look directly at where it was before you picked out where it is, your direct vision won't pick it up. Because the peripheral vision picks up light better. And the mind works in a very similar way. There is a mind that focuses directly on something, vitakka, and the aspect of consciousness that focuses on the whole field, the whole milieu. So what you're doing is you're holding, just like now you're looking at me, but you're also aware of the door, aren't you, without having to look at it. It's there. Now, if you start to allow yourself to see the door with the same intensity that you're looking at me, you feel that shift? And there's even almost a tendency to just look at the door,
isn't it? I like meditation.
And that's how the mind works. Mind works the same way. Now, as you develop the absorption more and more, the vichara starts to disappear. You get like tunnel vision. It's called first jhana, second jhana. second stage of absorption is when you really aren't aware of anything except the object. And those thoughts just die down. Those other possibilities. There's only just the thought of the direct experience. That's when the absorption is getting deeper, or the mind is streaming more and more continuously at one point, and so there's less peripheral information coming in. And the absorption gets deeper, the bliss is greater, the light changes. There's a feeling like somebody's adjusted the dimmer switch. Get PT, you might feel like your body is a lot bigger all of a sudden, or heavier, or one of those things. Is that good?
Would you recommend doing this once or twice a day, and for what length of time?
There are different schools of recommendation on that. A lot of that comes in dialogue with whoever you're working with. I would recommend that you work with more than one teacher, but when you're working with one teacher, only do what they tell you, and work with them long enough so that you get a sense of what they say. Because every teacher knows something different. And you, of course, like me, want to know everything. So go shopping, you know. But treat each teacher with respect. Whether you like them or not, whether you feel they're right or not, they have shared with you what they have to share, and you thank them and you move on. And as a general rule, when you're beginning, you want to be able to sit long enough so that you can actually watch the mind go through a cycle. The mind usually goes through a cycle in about 15 to 20 minutes. So it's good to do multiples of that, like 20 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes. It's not a good idea to sit for more than an hour, she said, as if she kept her own word. This is definitely a case of do as I say, not as I do. I, who tend to sit for 2.5 hours every morning, you know. But pretend I don't do that. Pretend you don't know that I do that. To say, oh yes, I'll do it like Cecily does. But when you begin, it's usually like 3 to 5 minutes where your mind is settling in. Your mind is just settling into the practice, right? You go to the in-basket, and then you go back to your meditation, then you go to the in-basket, and then you go back to your meditation. So it takes like 3 to 5 minutes to sort of get yourself centered. And then there's 5 minutes or so, maybe longer, of building the concentration. Then there's probably 5 minutes of actually holding the object more or less well. And then the mind gets restless again, sort of comes out of that cycle for about 5 minutes. So if you do 3 cycles of that, that's ideal. But you can't always do that when you begin, unless you're sitting with other people and you're sure they're all enlightened, and if you move, they'll know you're not, you know. Some other peer group pressure helps you do that. But generally speaking, if you're starting to sit, it's probably a good idea to do a short amount and leave yourself a little bit hungry. So it's probably better to do like 15 or 20 minutes when you begin, and do it regularly. It's better to do a regular short practice than to do an hour one day, none the next day, 2 minutes the next, none for 3 weeks. And so to regularly do it, you don't have to always do it at the same time, but that does help. You don't have to have a special place to do it, but you should have a place that isn't too cluttered. You should have it some semblance of order or neatness, even if your whole room is a total disaster. Clean one corner and face that corner. Now, make a place that isn't too, that doesn't have papers around, and you know, that has a sense of orderliness to it. Because a mind will keep jumping on all the things that are disordered or that you mean to do, and it just makes it harder for you. It's nice, wear loose clothing, you know, your body shouldn't smell because it'll disturb you. Don't wear anything tight. You know, these are kind of basic rules. Some meditations, like the Cheng Meizi will do tomorrow, they are a set time. And so if you're finding that you do better at doing 15 or 20 minutes, what you would do is one day you would do 20 minutes of it, and the next day you'd take it up from that point and do the next piece, and then the next day, next piece, so that over 3 days you would complete the whole practice. That's quite allowable. And after you have established the ability for 20 minutes, push it a bit. And set a time, say, okay, now I'm going to sit for 40 minutes. And sit for that 40 minutes. And after you sat for 40 minutes for 3 days, you know you can sit for 40 minutes. 3 days is basically the rule. Do something for 3 days, you can do it. And then move it up to an hour, well, 55 minutes, and 5 minutes for the review, in which you can move around as much as you want. Is that good? Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
First session talked about the other offerings, and the first bowl it suggests that sometimes it's more appropriate to quench the thirst by actually acting on the desire. At other times it's more appropriate to cut off the desire, and also not try and just hide a desire or cover it up.
Don't hide it.
How is it that, you know, you're able to know which action is appropriate, like to act on it?
Well,
cut it off?
I like this question a lot. As I was saying to you, when I was in the monastery, this idea kept coming up that I really should have gotten married. And I couldn't get past it. And it kept coming up. And I found myself eyeing some of the monks in my spiritual way.
Right.
So that was a very clear indication, you know, even if I try to get rid of this desire, it's going to go underground. Okay, I better do it fully and with some kind of honor. So then I did. Monastery and found somebody who was willing to get married, and we got married. If there is a desire that, I'm talking about desires that obey the five precepts, basically. I'm not talking about if you keep coming up with the idea you'd like to kill the person sitting next to you or something like that. Robbery or any of those things. Those things cause harm to others, and they will also have, in all actions, have a reaction. and the reaction from those actions, you don't want to have to deal with in this life or to give it to some whoever you're making to deal with. Right? So I'm talking about within the boundaries of morality. You don't want to do things that are not considered moral. But generally, if something comes up and it does not cause harm to anyone, and it comes up repeatedly, then check it out. In the Dzogchen tradition, they have a saying, if you think of something three times, do it. Well, that sure cleans up your thought patterns, I'll tell you. It's a fast path. Now, I think that for some people that's quite a reasonable way to practice, but not for everybody. And sometimes a repeated desire, like for example, I was talking about those demons that come up in meditation too. You can tell there's a quality to the ones that really are a reflection of a very deep, you know, emotional pressure. But you know, those demons that I talked about, familiarity and the demon of like and dislike and stuff. And generally speaking, when you're practicing meditation and you have good focus and you're holding your mind at one point, the mind then starts to go deeper and deeper through the layers of what one usually allows into consciousness. And you become more and more aware of the vastness of being human. As layers unfold and you learn more, you get that one point in mind, you can do that. And usually there is a little bit of a tension between layers. When the consciousness is about to move through to another level of understanding, there's a little bit of tension. You find this a lot under any circumstance, like the first time you're going to leave home. You know, you really don't feel comfortable about it. So you usually pick a fight with your parents, hoping they'll throw you out, you know? So it'll be their fault. Or whatever, you know? And all through your life, you can see yourself doing that, trying to find the way to make a transition easier so you can almost like close your eyes and be propelled through it rather than that you actually have to be there while it's happening. Oh my God, ruler. There's a beautiful story about a man who was watching a monarch butterfly coming out of a cocoon. And he was absolutely engrossed in this. And then he saw how hard the butterfly was struggling to open the cocoon to get out. And so he had some manicure scissors. So he really, with exquisite care and tenderness, helped open the cocoon. And the butterfly came out, but the struggle was what it needed to be able to open its wings. The sap, the blood, the juices weren't running through the wings, and the wings wouldn't open. So, you know, we're all like that. We need a certain amount of the struggle to actually be able to survive in the new level. So whenever, for a long period of time, whenever I was on retreat, whenever the consciousness was about to move through a new level, usually there's a little bit of restlessness, or that pain will come, or the itch will come, which is why you teach yourself to say, oh, mind must be about ready to go deeper. This is just sort of like, oh, maybe you really want to scratch your forehead rather than really keep the focus here. But for me, it got down to a one-liner that would used to go across my mind, almost like one of those airplanes pulling a little sign. And it would go like this. Gee, it would be nice to have a cigarette. Now, that was not an actual desire that I should follow. At that point, I would say, ah, I better really focus here. This must be one of those points to move through. So you try that, you try moving through, you try moving through. But if it comes up at different moments, not only, and you get caught in it, or it comes up in the dreams, or it comes up at different times, hey, you know, this one really is not going to let go easily. And which is easier, to live it or to keep fighting it? And then if you have a teacher, you could discuss it with them. If your teacher isn't, like some people named Namgyal Rinpoche we know, who won't discuss anything unless you can keep it down to one sentence. Although there are ways around that too. And I found most of them. I'll sell them to you for a very small price. Oh, that'll be a few more lifetimes for me. Oh, mea culpa. And you know, like some of them, they just seem like there is something not complete, something you have to finish before you can go further. They have a very specific quality to them. You know them when you meet them. You really do. And a friend of mine, who I haven't seen for many years, who was a very wonderful tohu, very accomplished, used to, when he fell asleep, used to speak Tibetan. And used to tell his parents about this or that person, and then when a Rinpoche came through, his father was telling the Rinpoche, you know, my son is talking about this or that person, and the Rinpoche said, who's talking about these people? Well, my son is talking about them. Where's your son? And this Rinpoche knew those people, only they were in their 60s and 70s. And my friend at that time was 5 years old. And it became obvious that he had a very clear memory and had very clear accomplishment from many lifetimes. Well, from one lifetime in particular, but a few to get there. And there was a lot of pressure for him to go and be trained in a monastery, but his parents are Western. And he was really caught. Because he wanted to be a 14-year-old boy, and he also was what he was. And he was really caught. And he wrote to Karma Tinley. He wrote a letter to Karma Tinley saying, I cannot go now, I cannot fight my karma. I must accept my karma. And it's like that, you know, that first bowl, sometimes you know what it is you want, but you know you cannot go there yet, that there's something else you need to do first. Because it is more compassionate to allow some seeds of karma to ripen. Life is not only about what you can accomplish. It's also your role in the community. What is compassionate for all beings? So sometimes some of those choices have to do with that level. And the ones that you really cannot, the ones that you really do have to accept, they have a quality to them that is very deep. You don't miss them. They're not, should I get a haircut, or, you know. They're not like that. Gee, I've always wanted to live with three different women at once. Or, you know, those aren't it. That's not it. They're much more profound than that. They're not about drugs, sex, and rock and roll. A darn one. Well, maybe if you were Catholic. I'm not sure. Does that help? Mm-hmm.
So you're watching for the persistence of these. Allow that persistence to be there, and also allow the time for a clarity in terms of what one should, I mean, the nature of the action that you should take to arise. A clarity.
A clarity. Mm-hmm. A sense of that. Yeah. That's excellent. Yeah. Because the clarity will come. You know, if they are dependent on the need to allow the seeds of karma to ripen. So if you don't let them ripen, they're going to ripen sometime anyway. You know, I was in Japan, living in Japan when Richard Baker. Do you know who Richard Baker is? He was the Roshi Zen Center for a long time after Suzuki Roshi died. Who started Zen Center in California, Suzuki Roshi, and his regent, who he named to take over from, was Richard. Richard was living in Japan with his wife Jenny and his daughter Sally when I was in Japan doing Zazen. And we were friends there. And Richard was very dedicated and very clear about what he was going to accomplish. His path was absolutely clear. He was married, he had a family, and he was a Zen priest. Hmm? It was set. And he really focused on that, and he did not allow any other desire to manifest. Okay? So years later, he is the head, the Roshi of Zen Center. And then you have these young women coming up saying that their teacher has had sex with them and it's all this problem, this one and that. I mean, if you don't work with the desire, it's still going to be there, some desires. And for one person that will come, and for another person it comes. I'm sure Richard doesn't have such problems now. It would have been nice if he could have dealt with the desire before he was in that role. It would have made his life a lot easier, and a lot of other people too. And, you know, people in America who love to talk about good and bad and right and wrong. And, you know, brand people would have had an easier time, you know. But nonetheless, by the same token, many things were learned from the way it did go. But the truth is, if there are certain aspects of consciousness that are going to move through, seeds of karma that are going to ripen in this lifetime, they are going to ripen. So you do what you can, and what you can't do, you accept. Just like any path. The spiritual practice in Buddhist tradition is not to make oneself stainless steel, unmoved by all time, perfect throughout all time and space until you die and go to a stainless steel heaven. That is not it. Much to my sorrow, I discovered that. I really thought that would be a good idea. I like the idea of becoming a Buddha.
Nothing will bother me. I am holy.
And maybe I'm wrong, and that's still maybe, but I don't think so. I have a feeling we're all very much just what is present. And to change the mind that dislikes that is a more powerful action than changing the nature of creation.
it's in regard to that person we're looking at. There is a tendency for the mind to kind of approach a desire or a thirst and shear off through. So there's a confusion and I would say conflicts about the desires. And I'm just wondering if there is a way to kind of clear that a little bit.
So would you say that there is desire and then there's a desire to have no desire?
I haven't thought about this very deeply.
Just take a minute and feel it.
The feeling is of this moving.
There's desire and then there's a desire to get away from the desire. At desire.
There's
a desire and the desire to not see the desire. So you got kama, tanha, and vibhava. So you got the two there. Basically with vibhava tanha, which is the desire for extinction, or for the extinction of that desire, you name it. You say, oh, there's vibhava tanha. Let me feel it. And I'm here. Because it gets most of its power by being hidden. And you keep yourself present in the moment and just let yourself feel it. There's the desire to not have desire. When you're not afraid of the vibhava tanha, when you just accept it for what it is, it's just a wind. Then you can start being curious what happens when the desire comes up for an experience and then the desire for extinction comes up. You'll be able to see that bridge more, and it will straighten itself. It's mostly habitual. As if there were danger in desire. It's mostly habitual. So you feel that desire to extinguish. You allow yourself to just feel what that's like. You know, just feel open to it. Feel how it works. What often one tends to do with that one is get busy with vibhava tanha, with the desire for extinction. Most people get really busy trying to get away from it because it doesn't feel good. It's like being dragged down.
I also go
through. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is a way to get your mind busy. I'm not here. It's to not be here.
Mm-hmm.
Get busy with something else. So instead of that, just to feel it. Don't react to it. Just actually open yourself to it and feel it. Draw pictures of it. Works very well. Or on the right side of the body, or the left side. You know, all those questions. And just kind of make friends with it a bit. I would work with that one first, and then the other one would just come. You can try it and let me know anyway. Boy, that first bowl is a good bowl, isn't it?
This looks like water, but...
Something else in there.
Whole lot of stuff in there, isn't it?
That's the reason it's the first bowl.
Haven't you done that, the breast or a piece of Is that good?
The tape machine at this point failed to record the rest of this lesson.